everyone, and welcome to the Play Button's annual Flash Gordon Memorial Awards. We're your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and please give a warm welcome to Mr. Matt Wilson.
Yes, indeed. We finally did it, everybody. We got to the level where numbers are irrelevant, and we're using weird symbols to represent.
Numbers are and always have been fake, Matt. You know that.
That's right. So that means it's time for the Play Button Gordy Awards.
Written in the stars, a million miles away.
You can take a swing at my ego. You can make a run for my crown. Those are some Play Button lyrics for you.
Hey, Matt.
Uh-huh.
Welcome to my house. Folks, it's the Gordy Awards. That's right. And we are here at the Flash Gordon Memorial Coliseum in beautiful North Carolina. We have an amazing turnout. We're up on the stage here looking out at the crowd with so many faces. The entire cast of Pottersville is here.
I'm so happy that Michael Shannon could make it. Hey, lighten up, buddy.
Yeah, looks like he's not having a good time. Maybe watch that movie of his.
We kid. Michael, it's great to have you here. All the rest of the cast of Pottersville, I'm so happy to have you here, including Bigfoot himself.
Yeah, the real Bigfoot made it.
Of course the real Bigfoot made it.
He's here every year.
Yeah, he's always an invited guest. So who else is here? We've got Pikachu in the audience.
Pikachu in the house, of course, celebrating the release of Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, which I have not played and will not be receiving an award this evening. Sorry, Pikachu.
There's always next year when we give an award to a game we played that came out a year or two ago. But talking about some current games that we played, Link in the audience, as always.
Link is here in some form every year. Always has a good time. Gets a little too wild on that Lon Lon milk. But it's going to be a good night, buddy. Who else do we have in attendance, Matt?
We have Princess Peach and Princess Daisy here.
Daisy and Princess Peach, both here. And Pauline, Mayor Pauline,
of course,
in the house.
Of course, Mayor Pauline came here from New Donk City. Mario is filming a movie in Thailand, so we weren't able to get him.
The Christmas Bounty, too.
Yeah.
The Christmas Bound tie.
No. Oh, boy, we're having fun.
90s Superboy, so good to see you in your leather jacket here. Folks, it's a capacity crowd. The skies must be dark, for all the stars are here tonight.
That's right. I am so happy that both stars of the movie Skip Trace are here.
Matt, look, I'm going to pull back the curtain for a second. You know we would be losing our shit if we were in the same room as Jackie Chan.
Oh, I'm talking
about... That is legit. That is a shoot.
I'm talking about Johnny Knoxville and Eve Torres.
Oh, okay, okay.
I'm sorry, I wasn't more specific.
So what do we do here at this award show for the past 69,421 years, Matt?
The last Play Button number of years?
Yep.
Well, here's how the Gordy Awards work. The Flash Gordon Memorial Awards. Our listeners send us categories. Categories, you might call them. We choose winners in each of those categories to whom we are giving awards. Then, after all of that, we award the prestigious War Rocket Ajax Intercontinental Championship.
The highest honor that any person, concept, anything can achieve, the War Rocket Ajax Intercontinental Championship. It's going to be real tough to hand out these awards this year, I got to say, because, you know, coming off of 2017, it was a year when so many good things happened. Just good thing after good thing. It was in no way a constant waking nightmare.
Yes, I certainly wouldn't refer to 2017 as one giant stress time. One giant stress time. Not what
one
that
giant year was. Stress time. Not what we're going to refer 2017 as, for sure.
Acknowledging how great of a good year it was. Chris, let's dive into some of these categories. What do you say? It's time to give away some awards. Chris, this first set of categories, comes from our pal, CJ Crawl.
Good old CJ Crawl, good guy, great Twitter avatar.
He's got a couple of exclamation mark categories for us, starting with most biting political commentary in a comic book.
We had to actually look this one up, but I think we are in agreement that this comes from the late lamented The Flintstones, put out by DC Comics in 2016 and 2017. A book that even less than a year removed, I cannot even imagine it actually coming out.
It is absolutely bananas that that book came out for the 12 issues that it did. It started in June of 2016 and ended in June of 2017. So we got it for half of 2017, but it continued its political bent into 2017. It is the comic where Fred Flintstone talks to his good pal Barney Rubble about having participated in a genocide.
Yeah, it's the comic where Fred Flintstone, and I think this one might have happened in 2016, where Fred Flintstone talks about how maybe he didn't get married for love, but he just got married because he didn't want to be alone anymore.
Yeah.
It's real. It's raw.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in it about colonialism. There's a lot of stuff in it about general, like, looking down your noses on other races or classes of people, exemplified by, like, straight-up cavemen in that book. And then there's a lot of, like, capitalist satire in there.
Yeah, it is a full-on brilliant satire. And we talked about this at the time. It filled the void of Prez. And we should say this was I believe all 12 issues were by Mark Russell and Steve Pugh. Mark Russell, I know, wrote all 12. Boy, oh boy, it's an intense book. It's it hit political satire in the way that we described Prez as political satire with a shotgun. I feel like Flintstones was political satire with a knife.
Or a giant rack of ribs. Either one.
Or an armadillo curled up into a bowling ball.
This comic hasn't come out yet, but I believe the 2018 frontrunner for this category is going to be the Mark Russell written Snagglepuss comic.
Yeah, which just came out first week of January 2018.
Yeah.
Which I'm interested in, but like, I'm really curious to see if Russell can keep up the same kind of biting and extremely unexpected satirical bent across three different titles, because that would be extremely impressive.
The Flintstones is our winner. CJ's next category is Best Unexpected Surprise.
Now, I don't have a pick for this one, Matt, because if you recall, most of our surprises were genuinely terrible.
Totally fair. I think my answer for this one, my winner for this one, has to be how unexpectedly great and weird and dark the Batman Elmer Fudd crossover issue was. That comic came out of nowhere.
Yeah, that comic was like, there's a whole class of comics that, to DC's credit, I can't imagine anyone actually approving, but they exist. Flintstones was one of them. I don't know if you know this, Matt. Scooby Apocalypse is still coming out every month. It's had 21 issues.
That is bonkers.
Yeah, and that's probably the easiest one to sell of this entire weird subset of DC books where they're using the Warner Brothers and Hanna-Barbera properties. Batman and Elmer Fudd was one of my favorite comics of the year, one of the genuinely funniest comics of the year, and like dark and hilarious in a truly wonderful way that we don't get to see Tom King do that often.
It's such a strange artifact of a strange year. Here's my runner-up for that one, because I think my top one has to be the Batman Elmer Fudd thing, but my runner-up for that one is G-Dog.
G-Dog, I feel like, is going to be going home with a lot of awards this year. G-Dog's going to have a good year here at the Gordies.
Yeah. Well, G-Dog, if you don't know what we're talking about, G-Dog was the star of a two-issue arc in Astro City about a guy who merges with a dog to become a superhero named G-Dog. It's not that it's surprising that Astro City is good, because it's always good. It's just that that comic is so weirdly heartwarming and great, and I loved it so much.
So many good comics this year, and so many like ones that G-Dog was not the Astro City story that I think either of us expected, other than just being good.
Yeah.
And wonderful, wonderful surprise, that one. I would give a strong runner-up to Valiant High, because I don't think any of us expected Valiant to drop a just really well-done and very funny high school AU on us that would then kind of launch Daniel Kibblesmith into their go-to guy, which he seems to have become of late.
I'm very excited for Quantum and Woody. That's going to be a good comic book. Yeah, Valiant High was definitely a cool surprise this year. CJ, thank you for sending in those categories. Our next set of categories come from Harry. Just Harry.
Just Harry.
First up on his list of categories is best use of hobo folklore in a comic.
I think this is a category heavily weighted.
It's a weighted category, yes.
It's a weighted category.
A leading category.
Yeah, heavily weighted in favor of Kyle Starks's Rock Candy Mountain, maybe my favorite comic of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a contender for best comic of 2017.
In the way that every year for the past few years has had a Kyle Starks comic that is my favorite comic of the year, this one certainly qualifies, and getting the story in ongoing form as opposed to just reading it all at once. Although before it came out, Kyle did send me like the first three issues, so I got to read all of those as one big unit. Getting it parceled out is a sort of beautiful agony, Matt. But I think it's definitely the idea of the devil appearing to a soldier in World War I and giving him the power of no man being able to defeat him in combat.
Yeah.
That is, like, you're from the South, Matt. I'm from the South. We're two Southern gentlemen.
It's true.
I would say that you, me, and Chad are the last of the Southern gentlemen, arguably.
Arguably, yes.
I will argue about it, so it is arguable. And so we love stories about the devil showing up at the crossroads at midnight to offer you something in exchange for your soul. And maybe, just maybe, you pull some wily trickery on the devil and send him back to North Carolina, where there is a place called the Devil's Tramping Ground, which is legendarily where the devil comes up from hell to plot the ruination of mankind. That's the kind of thing we like, and I like that in this comic book.
Yeah, it's great. Absolutely fantastic. And it's hard to pick just one piece of hobo folklore. Like, the devil stuff is probably – it's appealing in a very particular way. But all the hobo folklore stuff from, like, the rules of the cage fighting league – to, like, putting a watch in a bag and throwing it in a tree.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff.
I mean, the fact that it's called Rock Candy Mountain and is about the search for Rock Candy Mountain, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, yeah, it literally, like, the issues are literally lines from the song.
Yes.
Applied thematically or literally to the contents of that issue. What a delight. What an amazing delight that book is. Next up, Harry's got this category.
Well, hang on a second, Matt, because I know that we're usually the presenters, but I think we've got a special guest who can present this one.
Hello, it's me, Chimera O'Connor, here to, you know, talk about a podcast that where people, you know, there's a guy on there who sounds like me, and he's got brothers who play games like me, too. And, you know, I like listening to it. I like listening to the show, and it's a fun time. You can hear me, Chimera O'Connor, on the podcast Your Only Option, if you search for that. And I'll talk about my brothers and my podcast and all the great things you can get from Blue Apron on that show. But this category is Best Character on the Adventure Zone.
Oh, thank you, Chimera O'Connor, for joining us. This was honestly a tough one. I'm a big fan of the Adventure Zone, as you know, Chimera, and Matt, who has returned to the stage now. I can't believe you missed him. Chimera O'Connor was here.
Did I miss famous podcaster slash video game video maker slash music guy slash Carly Rae Jepsen fan Chimera O'Connor?
Former Vine star.
Yeah.
Yeah, you missed Chimera O'Connor, man. I'm sorry. But anyway, the category is favorite Adventure Zone character or best Adventure Zone character. I think I gotta go with Angus McDonald, right?
Angus is great. Angus is
He's kind of the best one.
He's the one when they do their live shows that the crowd goes the most nuts for.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of live shows, although it was not the Adventure Zone, I did. I was at the Candle Nights show for my brother and me, and other assorted podcasts this year. Did most definitely confirm my belief that number one McElroy by far, Justin, first place. You don't realize it till you realize it, and then it's irrefutable. Clint, strong number two.
So that plays into my best Adventure Zone character, Merle.
You think Merle's the best?
Yeah, I love Merle.
I will say, like, when it came out that Merle was kind of a deadbeat dad, like, that's when I really started to like Merle as a character.
Yeah. Like, Merle sneaks up on you as, like, how well-developed and smartly dumb of a character he is.
I have a question for you in the disbursement of this category, Matt.
Sure.
What do you think, as a character of Taco?
As a character?
Yes.
Taco is all over the fucking place.
Yeah, I have had discussions with friends of mine who listen to the show who have mentioned that they feel like Justin is, I believe the quote that was dropped on me is, dragged kicking and screaming into character development, which I don't necessarily agree with.
I think by the end, Taco is more developed. But I also feel like, and this isn't totally Justin's fault, I think Taco kind of got railroaded into being a moral character when he starts out as a totally amoral character.
One thing that I think the Adventure Zone has done that is inarguable is that it has brought a whole lot of people to role-playing games and Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
And I think there's an element of, and I'm trying to say this in, like, the least gatekeeper-y way that I can, because I don't mean it in that way. There's an experience that I think a lot of people have had as, like, with picking up role-playing games and trying to get into the hobby for the first time, where inevitably one of the guys you play with does not want to tell a story. He wants to stab the other characters.
Yeah.
And that is a crucial part of D&D, and I feel like that's absolutely where Taco originates, because his fucking name is Taco.
Yeah.
I think over the course of the show, like, I think his character development is really interesting to me, because I think it happens between moments in a really interesting way. Whereas you get a lot of Merle character development and a lot of Magnus character development that like plays out in these big moments. Like Magnus's origin story is really good.
I think Magnus is, weirdly enough, the most consistent character.
Oh, yes. Well, because he's the fighter and therefore simplest.
Yeah, Magnus doesn't really change.
Yeah.
Taco goes from being a character who will stab the other characters in the back in an instant, will steal stuff, will
steal silverware. Yeah.
But while also admonishing other characters for stealing at one point.
I think the line he uses is, this is insured.
Yeah. He also doesn't get on that elevator and go fight in that little bottle city because he just doesn't care. And then introducing Loop, which I don't dislike Loop as a character at all. I think Loop is a great addition. But introducing Loop kind of changes Taco.
Well, I think it gives him an in-character reason to suddenly care about something.
Yeah.
Like Loop and Kravitz both give him a thing to care about when for so long his defining character trait is like verging on nihilism.
Yeah, I mean, to me,
just not giving a shit.
To me, the ultimate Taco moment is fooling Garfield the, what is it? What is his like
official title? Garfield the Deals Warlock?
Garfield the Deals Warlock. Into giving him or selling him the flaming poisoning sort of doom.
Yes.
For the hell of it. Like, yeah. He's not even going to use the sword.
Yeah. And then that coming back at the end, too. Like, that – Taz did a really good job of, like, bringing stuff back and tying it in. Like, maybe even – like, if anything, went too far into that.
Well, I feel like Taz became – or at least the balance arc kind of became cannibalistic by the end. And almost like nostalgic about itself in a way that I didn't – like I don't love the end of the balance arc like a lot of people do. And people are probably going to get mad at me for even saying this, so I'm going to shut up here. But the middle arcs are my favorite part of balance.
I think all of the balance arc is good and perfect, and my favorite character is also your favorite character. Isn't that funny how that works out? So please direct all hate mail to Matt Wilson. No,
as Chimera O'Connor, I think that it was all good. I worked really hard on that. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I also wrote a lot of music, and I described grand vistas stretching on into the infinity. That's got to be – we're got to be done talking about the Adventure Zone.
I think it's clear that we both really like it. Yeah, Ango is number one in our hearts and minds.
Except I like Merle.
Except Matt likes Merle.
Thanks for sending those in, Harry. Next up, we have a category from Philip Lopez. One category, best online comic about comic creators and Looney Tunes characters.
I was mystified by this until I remembered what it was, until you reminded me that this existed. And then I had the feeling, like, the experience of it all came rushing back. Again, strong contender for maybe best, if we gave it a traditional award for best short form comic,
yeah,
it would be this.
What we're talking about is a comic that Jason Latour, artist of Southern Bastards, writer of many wonderful comics, posted on his Instagram and on Twitter, reporting essentially what I assume was a real life conversation between himself, Ryan North, and Chip Zdarsky, starting with the question of what's Porky Pig's main character trait? Like, what's Porky Pig about? That somehow morphs into a conversation about Ryan North thinking Elmer Fudd is an incredibly noble family man.
Well, because it starts with Ryan North having what I think is a legitimate question, which is what is Porky Pig's character? Because all of the other Looney Tunes have defined characters. And I agree with that. Porky Pig is kind of the one who fills different roles depending on who he's playing opposite. Like the Porky Pig of the Robin Hood Daffy cartoon, which I'm a big fan of, obviously, is not the Porky Pig of other cartoons, where he's more of a straight man.
So I think he's always a straight man, but
he's got to be a foil.
He's a foil. He's got to be a different kind of foil for different characters. I also think the way Jason Latour puts it at the end of the comic, which it has, he has Porky saying, I'm an onlooker to the absurd or something like
that. I'm a witness to the absurd. Yeah.
Yeah. That is also a good description of Porky Pig.
Well, and this is, I think, especially relevant for us because in our last episode, which was our Christmas special, because as we all know, Christmas special, then the Gordies, it's been like that for literally 9 fucking years.
Yeah.
Like we talked about the, like maybe the weirdest Porky Pig moment of all time when he's going to be in Lola Bunny's Christmas play. And she's like, oh no, you're a pet pig. And so he takes off his jacket and turns his bow tie to the side, like it's a decorative bow, and then just gets down on the floor and oinks. And like Porky Pig's mutability is fascinating. But anyway, Ryan North says Bugs Bunny is a gold-hearted grifter, which I think is maybe not the most accurate, but good enough. Daffy is a frustrated egotist. Yes, identify with it. And then he says Elmer Fudd is a good man, a family man. And that's when Latour's drawing of Chip Zdarsky is the most perfect character of anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's like all the expressions in that book. Oh, and his drawings of himself are incredible.
Oh, they're good. But like he draws himself like as a like almost as a cartoon. I mean, they're all like obviously drawn. So they're all kind of cartoon characters, but
yeah. But like Latour draws himself as like almost featureless.
Yeah, he's all eyes.
Yeah.
But if you have not seen this comic, just Google, like you can just Google Jason Latour, Ryan North, Elmer Fudd, and it will come up. It's one of the best. It's incredible because there's like this, you very rarely get to see. And this is the twist of the comic. Chip Zdarsky in this comic is Porky Pig. He's a witness to the absurd.
Yeah. Because Latour's reactions to what Ryan North is saying, they're the big reactions, right? They're the Daffy Duck reactions.
They're the Daffy Duck reactions.
So, obviously, Jason Latour's Looney Tunes comic about his conversation with Ryan North and Chip Zdarsky is the best online comic about comic creators and Looney Tunes characters. Thank you for sending in that category, Philip.
All right, so I think it's time for us to hand the stage over to our first musical guest of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen, Run the Jewels.
Oh, Chris, I'm sorry. They canceled.
We don't have Run the Jewels.
They ended up having a show like in a real arena.
Okay, well, you understand that I put out like a lot of money, like a lot of my money for this.
Well,
when did you know about this? When did you know?
I mean, they called like earlier in the week.
Okay, so you were okay with just making me look like an asshole?
I mean, I thought you knew. I thought they called you too.
I look like a fucking asshole right now, Matt.
Look, I'm sorry. I thought they were communicating with both of us. I think you were CC'd on the email.
Thing and see whose email addresses are in there. Does it say to Matt Wilson and some asshole who's just standing on a stage right now?
Look, well, let's just talk about this later. I'm sure.
All right. Matt, little snafu there. You're gonna edit that out, right? You're gonna edit
yeah,
that out.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Little snafu there. But let's go ahead and get to our next set of categories.
All right, Chris. These categories come from Luke Hare. And the first is the Ken Lowry Award for the greatest human adversary for War Rocket Ajax in 2017.
Matt, I don't know. Like, can you think of any people that maybe are like threats to our existence and livelihood out in the world these days?
I don't know that I have an adversary in mind. I do. I'm going to fudge this one. And say I'm going to say it's our greatest foil.
Okay.
Of 2017, and I don't think there's anybody who could beat Stone Cold HCC.
Really? Really? Because I was going to say Jim Davis. Because this really was the year that, like, Jim Davis kind of, like, we went to his house, and it wasn't like a DX invasion. It was like, I mean, I don't know if it came through on the recording, but I had driven like 4 hours, like starting at 10 p.m. and getting coffee at every Sheets that I passed on the way. And then we had Rocky's Hot Chicken for breakfast the next morning. So I was not doing too good tummy-wise.
Yeah, I get that. If we're sticking with adversary, I think it is Jim Davis. Yes. If we're changing it to foil, I think it's Stone Cold HCC.
Certainly, Stone Cold HCC should get some kind of award. Maybe like a Hell Yeah award. Yeah. Hell Yeah Construction Company award.
Yeah, I agree.
Is it the funniest thing that HCC stands for Hell Yeah Construction Company?
It's pretty fantastic.
Oh, Matt, I just got a beep on my beeper.
Okay.
Because, you know, I've got a beeper.
Sure.
Because technology is cyclical. Let me just see here. Let's see. I might have to call this number back. I'm sorry. I know we're on stage doing the Gordies right now, but I might have to call this number back. It might be important. Oh. That's weird. It says 316.
Ba-bow, ba-bow, ba-bow. Luke Hare's other category for us is the Unmentionable Award for the best food mentioned outside of snack situation in 2017.
Let's see. I think I mentioned this on the Christmas special, but the one that certainly came to mind, Aiden and I made gingerbread cookies, at Christmas time, mostly to take to my sister and her family and my mom when we met up at Dollywood for Christmas, where they had that good, good cinnamon bread. Oh, they had the good, good cinnamon bread. But these gingerbread cookies that we made were delicious. And it turned out that I am a bad baker. Like, I tried to make oatmeal cookies and had just a real rough time of it. But I'm very good at cookie decorating, which is unsurprising as it is a Christmas skill. So between the two of us, we made some just wonderful gingerbread cookies.
I'm going to cheat this one, too. I'm cheating both of Luke's categories.
You're a cheater, man.
I'm a cheater. This was technically on a snack situation, but it was on the snack situation that we did from the fair, which was a little different from other snack situation episodes. Mm-hmm. I got to go with that Frosted Flakes covered chicken that I had.
I really wish I would have gotten that, because my fair food, with like that fried peanut butter and jelly, I didn't know it was going to be an Uncrustable. Like, I could fry an Uncrustable.
The Frosted Flakes fried chicken. The thing about that Frosted Flakes fried chicken was that, like, you think it was just going to be like corn flakes covered fried chicken, and then it would lose that sugar. It did not.
Well, they put more sugar on it, didn't they?
Maybe. But the main thing about it for me was that I ordered that chicken, and the cashier turned to the kitchen of the food truck and said, "Give me a Tony," which was my favorite moment of the entire year.
Oh, that was very good. I think that counts because that was a snack situation special, but it was not ranked. Those items did not get ranked on the snack situation listuation.
I think we ranked all the fair food together, or we ranked the fair food against each other. We didn't rank it on the list.
I did not think to bring a copy of the list with me to the Mountain State Fair.
All right, Luke, thanks for sending in those categories. Our next set of categories comes from Daniel Sylvester, who starts us off with a category that knows us well. The I Know I Read the First Few Issues Award for the favorite comic series you started this year but didn't finish. And Chris, I think we have the same answer for this one.
There are so many contenders for this one, because yeah. I'll tell you what, I love a number one, and then like a number four, I want to read it. It just, there's a new number one out, and I gotta read that.
Well, I honestly think it's just an unfortunate result of reviewing comics, and you want to review the new stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
and you want to keep up, and so you're always trying to keep up with what's new.
Yeah.
But yeah, the one that I want to talk about, and you think you've got the same one, Matt?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're both going to say the same series, even though I have a runner-up too.
Hey, Matt, I just looked at my beeper. I've got some news.
Okay.
There's a covert action team.
That's, oh, you don't say.
Yeah, that's going on some covert ops, and it has been unauthorized, Matt. It's out in the wild.
What?
It's a wildcat.
What?
Yeah, that's right. I'm talking about the Wildstorm.
Yeah.
The most Warren Ellisist thing of the year that was not the Castlevania Netflix series, which is the most Warren Ellisist thing of all time.
Yeah, I read like two or three issues of the Wildstorm, liked them all, and then just could not – I just didn't keep up with it.
Yeah, it's because I realized I had missed two issues of Batman, the one comic I thought I was current on.
But yeah.
I swear, like, you know what I did? I sat down and I read comics tonight because I wanted to make sure I remembered some stuff. And I remembered how much I love just sitting down and reading comics. So I think we're going to be try to be better. But man, those first few issues of the Wildstorm were a hoot.
Yeah, they were fun, and I would love to catch up with it. I mean, we say this about literally everything, and only catch up with a few things. If we ever get around to doing comics catch up, if our Patreon gets there, the Wildstorm would be one that I would like to do. Another series that I only read the first couple issues of that I wanted to read more of was Bug.
Yes, I actually wrote that down as a potential for myself.
Yeah. A really fun book. I had a great time reading it. All reds on that book. A great looking comic, really like enjoyable and fun. I just didn't get past like issue two.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. And like, and I should, because it's the All Reds. I love Forager. It had the Sandman. OMAC, I think, shows up in the latest issue. And along those same lines, the Commandy Challenge was one that I was really excited about. And then I think I was keeping up with it for Comics Alliance. And then I lost my job. So I have not kept up with it since.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's another thing. It's like Comics Alliance was the reason for us to stay current on a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And now that we just do the reviews on the show, I just feel like I should be reading stuff to review on the show. And so I miss other things. Yeah, we got to do better about that. All right. The next category we have here from Daniel is the Kite Man Hell Yeah Award for the most surprising breakout character of 2017 that wasn't Kite Man.
Solid category. Hey, remember how there were like, it felt like 8 issues. I think it was more like 6. 8 issues that took place in the span of like an hour after Batman and Catwoman had sex, because this year was the year that Batman fucks, which is great.
And gets married, or gets engaged.
Batman has not fucked this much since like 2010.
I mean, I think you're forgetting the Tony Daniel Batman fucks splash page of 2012? Possibly 2011.
All I know is that he's getting a lot in this year, and I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him. You might not remember that the War of Jokes and Riddles takes place like with Batman going, "Hey, here's something I got to tell you now that we're done having sex." And then it goes on, and it's a fucking Kite Man origin story. Secretly, it is secretly a Kite Man origin story.
Yeah. It's true.
Do you think this is my 2017 question to you, Matt? Do you think that when Tom King first, like, because it happens early in his run, like he has, I think it's the Riddler, like say to Batman, he's like, "Hey, did you forget about the War of Jokes and Riddles?" And then it's like two stories later that he actually starts in on it. Do you think when he wrote that first story, he was like, "It's going to be Kite Man's origin"? Or do you think that came later? I think it came like the day that issue came out.
I mean, all the Kite Man stuff was in like interlude stories. So I have a feeling that was something that wasn't necessarily part of the original, like, War of Jokes and Riddles pitch, even though he became pretty integral to the War of Jokes and Riddles story. So
yeah, when that thing comes out in paperback, it should be called Kite Man : Hell Yeah : The War of Jokes and Riddles.
Agreed. I agree wholeheartedly. But anyway, this category is about characters who are not Kite Man.
My pick for this one, I think you could argue that maybe 2016 was her breakout year, but 2017 was the year that we got Gwenpool number 16, which was the issue of Gwenpool that I think if people were skeptical, if people were reading it and they wanted to tell people, like, no, this is what this comic is, that was the one they gave to people. And that comic was amazing. That was Chris Hastings, a friend of the show, and Gurihiro, who I am a huge fan of. They are amazing. And the narrative trickery in that comic is so good and so well done and plays with the idea of who Gwenpool is and what she does in a way that's, like, really smart and just, like, on a craft level. Services that character so well. So definitely, like, that is one that I would pick. Gwenpool had an amazing year in terms of breaking out into the potential of what a character can be.
I think that's probably that's a solid choice for sure. I'm gonna go in a slightly different direction and say that the promoter from Thor versus Hulk Champions of the Universe.
The promoter's pretty good.
Is a fucking fantastic character.
Who is that? Like, canonically is now one of the elders of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Love it. Love the promoter. That series was a digital exclusive comiXology series that way more people need to read.
Absolutely. Alti worked on that, who was the artist of X-Men 92. So if you've read that and enjoyed it, I think she does the even-numbered issues.
Yeah, the odd-numbered issues are Simone Buonfontino.
Yeah, who's also great.
Yeah.
But absolutely get that book because it's super, super fun.
Like, she is a literal, and Jeremy Whitley wrote the series. Like, the promoter is literally a pro wrestling promoter, a cosmic pro wrestling performer or promoter who wears, like, a hot pink top hat and, like, coat with tails. She's great. I love the promoter. Those are all our categories from Daniel Sylvester. Daniel, thank you for sending those in. Our next category comes from Alex Chung, who gave us the easiest category possible. The best fourth world comic book of 2017. It's Mr. Miracle. There's no question about it.
I mean, I know we just said that we did not read Olive Bug, but, like, with apologies to the All Reds, Mr. Miracle is the best fourth world comic since, like, 1990. Sorry.
It just is not the year to compete with any other fourth world comic. Mr. Miracle is going to be it. It is probably the comic of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Fourth world or not. Like, which is incredible. Like, we were talking about this earlier today when we were talking about, like, who we could potentially give the Intercontinental Championship to. And Tom King's name came up, obviously. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure we gave it to him. If not, like, I think last year was Kyle, and I think we gave it to Tom King the year before for doing, like, Omega Men and Vision and Sheriff of Baghdad, which were also all, like, just top-notch books. You know, Sheriff of Baghdad with Mitch Gerards. He's had, like, one of the best comics of the year for, like, the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think he had one of the best, like, maybe the best, like, on a craft level comic of the year this year. And also the one we have talked about maybe more than any other comic we have read, which was The War of Jokes and Riddles.
Yeah. Thanks for sending in that category, Alex. Next up, we have three categories from Andrew Robertson. I believe he sent us these same three categories last year. We're starting with best curse word in a comic.
My pick for this one is when they swear in Valiant High and it says the word swear, but in like with a dollar sign and a euro sign and an at sign. But they use it in place of all swear words. So there's a part where I think it's number three, where Eric Dacia refers to someone as a swear hole, which is beautiful.
that stuff's really great. It kind of reminds me of the replacing swear words with the word cuss in the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yes.
That's
where cluster cuss comes from, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
My choice for this is from Doom Patrol.
Okay.
My choice for this is from Doom Patrol number 8, where a dietary supplement called shit is introduced.
That's pretty good.
And it's on the box in the symbols, like the dollar sign, pound sign, exclamation mark. And I guess like a plus sign for the T. It's very old school comics and also very old school Vertigo, because it's something, so much of that Doom Patrol book is stuff that you could imagine being in, like, you know, Vertigo comics from 20 years ago.
Yeah, that one's another like definitely a potential winner of the I Know I Read the First Couple Issues award, because I really need to catch up on that.
I've been keeping up with Doom Patrol. I really like it.
See, that's the other thing. If you're keeping up with it, I feel like I don't need to.
Next, Andrew. The next category that Andrew has is Transformer of the Year.
Now, Matt, have you started in on this?
No.
Our good friend Jordan Witt, friend of the show, one of the artists we featured in our Patreon art before, finally started reading Transformers after me and Annie Creighton were bugging her to give it a shot. And so I was getting texts from someone who was experiencing it for the first time, and that was wonderful. But my pick is Swerve, who is the Transformer that I most identify with. Swerve is good stuff. He's the one who literally shoots his mouth off.
Yeah. So, good old Swerve.
You'll love him, Matt. I promise you.
Okay. I believe you. Next up is one that I think gave us some trouble last year and is probably going to give us some trouble again this year, because I just don't remember any, really. But the category is Kieran Gillen Award for Worst Pun of the Year.
I have one. But I gotta say it with
Chris.
I have one that I have to say with love, because this one is from the smash hit book, legitimately great. I love it. I love everything about it. It's Youngblood by Chad Bowers and Jim Toe. And there is a scene in Youngblood where they talk about a video of the team that was posted online that was called the Bloodstream.
Uh huh.
Yep, that's it. That's the one. Chad told me that like 2 years ago. And I love him. I love him. He's my partner in writing and in life for the most part. But boy, oh boy, the Bloodstream. That one was there from day one, everybody. And it's great.
The Bloodstream. Those are Andrew Robertson's categories. Thank you, Andrew, for sending those in. Next up, we have three categories from Quincy, one of the hosts of the Rank and Vile podcast, which is a very good show. He's starting us off with the Eddie Guerrero Memorial Best Cruiserweight Wrestler of 2017 Award.
This is like almost as easy to give as Best Fourth World Comic Book, because it's got to be Drew Gulak, right?
Yeah, I don't know who else it could be.
Because I haven't watched, like, I mean, it's legitimately, it's probably like Kota Ibushi, but I haven't watched a lot of New Japan. Meanwhile, Gulak is doing like career best work on a show no one watches. Just the best part of 205 Live consistently. Just in the ring, doing promos. You're familiar with the phrase, taking chicken shit and making chicken salad?
I am familiar with that phrase, indeed.
Being given the character on the show with all the high-flying flippy guys of being the guy who doesn't like high-flying flippy wrestling should be like a death sentence for a pro wrestler.
Yeah.
Gulak has made it work so well and had one of the best character moments of the year in WWE when he started like telling Enzo Amore that turning on, I think it was Tony Nese, like wasn't right. So he's been doing the best serious stuff, the best comedy stuff, great in-ring work, and legitimately like the high point of the week in wrestling for me is every time he shows up on 205 Live. He's the best part of WWE for me right now. By far.
Yeah.
Him and Sammy and Kevin.
Yeah, he's easily the best thing on the show. There are a lot of other wrestlers on 205 Live that I like. I'm a big fan of Cedric Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he's great, but he has not been given a lot of opportunity to be a great character. Possibly if he hadn't left, Neville might have been a good choice.
Talk about King Neville?
I'm talking about King Neville, yeah. Another person that I think is going to get there and that I think is going to be like really great at some point when he's given more opportunity to do cool stuff and be and have more of a character is Mustafa Ali.
Mustafa Ali, yeah, is really amazing in the ring.
He's really amazing in the ring. He just doesn't have – like the problem with so many 205 Live guys is like they're just good in the ring and then they don't get a chance to do anything else. What makes Gulak so great is that he found a way to transcend it.
Yeah, he has a character, whereas Mustafa Ali's character is like just good guy dressed like a Power Ranger.
Yeah, you know? Nice guy. Fine.
But something like – that would work perfectly if that was also not Cedric Alexander's character, you know?
Yeah. Jack Gallagher is getting there.
Jack Gallagher switching over to wrestling in like
a suit, like,
a legitimately like tailored suit clothes is amazing. Like when he comes out with like his fists taped, but he's wearing like wingtips and a tie and a vest. That's the strongest look on the show.
Yeah.
Like Drew Gulak's like PowerPoint stuff is great, but like Gallagher visually is next fucking level. I love that dude right
now. Yeah, he's good. He's good. I think Gulak wins, but there are some honorable mentions that I'm glad we got to. Next up on the list of Quincy's categories is the best new podcast of 2017.
Matt, you saw what I wrote down for this one.
I did. I saw that. It's very nice. It's very nice.
I looked at my podcast feed. I checked so that you wouldn't just think I'm putting you over. Legitimately, Smark of the Beast is my favorite new podcast of the year. I love every episode.
Well, I do appreciate that very much. It's been fun to do so far. We've gotten a lot of good lists, and we have a lot more to cover.
You have not done my list yet.
I think we're trying to just do them in the order they came in, and we got a lot like the second week. Mm-hmm. We were doing it. So we will get to it, I assure you. But yeah, it has been fun, and I'm looking forward to doing more of it in 2018. I'm also starting another new podcast in 2018 because I don't know where to stop. I wanted to mention a couple other podcasts that I really liked that started in 2017. Actually, Rank and Vile.
Oh, I didn't get that Quincy was fishing with that one. I thought Rank and Vile started in 2016.
It started very early in 2017. I've been on it. Chris, you've been on it. My co-host on Spark of the Beast, Matt Fisher's been on it. It is a great
Chad's
ranking.
Been on it too. Yeah.
Oh, Chad's been on it. It's a great ranking horror movies podcast, and I have had fun being on it, and I've had fun listening to other episodes. Another one that I wanted to mention that's just kind of like a big podcast of the year, but I haven't seen a lot of discussion about because it was one of those like narrative podcasts that came and went and kind of just finished its story and then wrapped up and went away, is a podcast called Homecoming, which is like a, like almost like a radio drama about, and Oscar Isaac is the, like one, Catherine Keener and Oscar Isaac are the lead characters in it. And it's about a caseworker working with a soldier who has really severe PTSD. And then she finds out that there's a lot more to it than it originally seems. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a story that was best told through the medium of podcasts. And it's not one that I've talked up on this show before. So I thought I would mention it. Homecoming. It's very enjoyable and a quick listen. I think I listened to it all within like a single day because you can grab all those episodes now. It's super good. So check that out if you're looking for like a narrative podcast to listen to. Let's see. One last category from Quincy. The Hot Archie Best Use of an Archie Property in 2017 Award.
It's got to be that specific scene in Riverdale where Archie becomes a vigilante, and his method of becoming a vigilante is to put the Riverdale High football team in ski masks and then shoot a YouTube video where they're all shirtless except Archie just hanging out in the locker room being shirtless vigilante boys.
I mean, if you're looking,
ever happened.
If you're looking for something that is specifically sexy Archie, that is definitely true. That is definitely the winner, hands down. I'm going to actually stick to comics with this one and give my award to the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina comic.
Did we get an issue of that this year?
I think there were two. I think two issues came out in 2017. And the one that I loved extra a huge amount, it might have only been one this year, actually, but I loved it. It was issue 8. It was an origin story about Sabrina's dad, and it was so good, so good. I loved that one issue of Chilling Issues Adventures of Sabrina. I wish that comic came out more regularly, but when it does, it's always a good read. And those are our categories from Quincy. Quincy, thank you for sending those in. Next up, we have two categories from our pal down under, the sender of Tim Tams, Lucas Brown.
Who did inform us that the special gelato Tim Tams are regular price.
Good to know. If you were wondering about that from the last snack situation special, now you know. Lucas's first category is the Bad Street USA Award for the worst comic book city to live in this year.
I think for the 79th year in a row, it's Gotham.
Do you have any specific reasoning behind that?
Yeah, a giant evil mountain erupted in the middle of the city, and then seven evil Batman came out to begin the mantling.
Kind of hard to argue with that.
Yeah. You know, there were seven evil Batman.
There was also a war of jokes and riddles that took place.
But that was in the distant past.
But the comics came out this year.
Yes, that's true. This is my theory. We have not had a chance to talk about it anywhere else. War of Jokes and Riddles is the 21st century Ten Knights of the Beast. The thing about Ten Knights of the Beast is, like, 400 people die in that story. The KGB's kills, I counted once, and I think on panel it's like 146. when the War of Jokes and Riddles happens, there's that one issue that all it is Deadshot fighting Deathstroke. But like, there's all the newspaper clippings where it's like 18 dead in Riddler attack or whatever. But it's also got the silliest moment of post-crisis 80s Batman comics, which is where KGB chops his own hand off with a fire axe.
Uh-huh.
Which even people, I went back and read the letter columns just recently. People were writing in about that, like, that month, being like, this is very stupid, guys. I feel like Kite Man's dark, grim, and gritty origin story is the KG Beast cutting off his own hand with a fire axe and replacing it with a crazy machine gun of the modern day. And I love them both equally.
I think that's a fair comparison. I think it is a fair comparison. Yeah, it's hard to top Gotham this year because you had the Mountain coming out during the Mantling. You had the War of Jokes and Riddles. You also had all the shit that went down in All-Star Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a lot.
Yeah, there was an acid rain in that.
Yeah. If I was going to give like a runner-up position, I think I got to go with Marvel Universe Las Vegas, which was razed to the ground by Hydra helicarriers. That was pretty bad.
But I imagine like living in the middle of Las Vegas, all due respect to Dylan Todd, is like probably pretty bad to begin with. There's too much light. Can't get a good night's sleep.
If you live on the Strip, that is true.
Yeah.
All right. Those are our categories from... Oh, wait. We have another one from Lucas. Another Kite Man Hell Yeah Award, but this one is for Best New Villain of 2017.
Well, Kite Man was not a new villain.
No, he was not. He's just... This category is just named in honor of him.
That's true. Matt, do you have a pick for Best New Villain of the Year?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Okay. Okay. Who is it? Get at me.
Dinosaur Ultron.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I can see that.
Like, not only is Dinosaur Ultron, like, a great idea, the ultimate Ryan North idea, mm-hmm. It's also an incredible design by Erica Henderson. And it's drawn in a dinosaur comics pose.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good stuff. I cannot really dispute that.
Oh, so good. Love Dinosaur Ultron. That was in Squirrel Girl, by the way. If you don't know, you should go read Squirrel Girl and go see Dinosaur Ultron. Because... I guess it's a little bit of a cheat on my part because it's technically just Ultron. Mm-hmm. But this one's a dinosaur.
Yeah. He shows up and literally goes, or I guess it's Squirrel Girl goes, Ultron is a dinosaur now.
Yeah. Yeah. That is from, if you want a specific issue, it is from Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 24, which came out in September. Super, super good. Anything to add to that one, Chris?
No, I think you got it. I think you got that one sewn up pretty good.
All right. Thanks, Lucas, for those categories. Next up, we have two categories from James Harmon, starting with the Mr. Kipling's Cherry Bakewell's Award for the comic book series or property in 2017 that one of you loves dearly and the other is at best neutral towards, and at worst uses as ammunition for some good-natured ribbing.
I feel like this one might have to be one you give to me.
It's Transformers.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not going to ever use it as ammunition for good-natured ribbing because I'm sure I will like it. I just haven't read it yet. And so I'm neutral and you love it dearly.
You're such a Megatron, Matt.
Don't I know it. And it's what everybody tells me. I think it's got to be the Transformers stuff. There's nothing else I can think of that it would be, because I feel like everything else we both like or dislike.
Most things we talk about, we like. It is a complaint we have received that most of the things we talk about, we both like about the same amount.
Yeah. And even stuff that I've like talked about that I feel like that I like and you are maybe lukewarm on, I end up not reading all of it. Like one of my contenders for the we read the first few issues thing was Black Cloud, which was an Image series that came out this year and was really good, but I only read like an issue of it.
What was the thing I got all mad about on the Every Story Ever list?
Oh, I don't remember.
I was fucking Jimmy Corrigan.
Yeah, but that didn't come out in 2017.
That did not come out this year. But I think it's the most difference we've ever had on a comic.
It's probably right, yeah. I'm way more likely to like, you know, kind of sad indie stuff than you are. That is true.
That is true. I do not fuck with that stuff at all. 0%.
All right, let's move on to the next category. This is the Dark Watchman Returns Award for comic book series or property in 2017 that we predict the majority of the comics industry, will learn the wrong lesson from.
This one's tough because I don't think I read anything that I think fits that. Like, I definitely read Doomsday Clock.
I don't think... Doomsday Clock is an example of a comic that has learned the wrong lesson already.
Yes.
It's a response. The comic that I think a lot of people are going to learn the wrong lesson from 2017 is Mr. Miracle.
Ooh, that's a good thought. I feel like, okay, here's the thing though. I feel like Mr. Miracle hasn't done anything that's going to be easy to reproduce.
No, but it has themes and content that I think the reaction that people are going to have, I think, to it is that, oh, people want to read about this stuff now.
Mm.
People want to read about these mental hangups and suicide and this dark stuff now. So these are the comics we're going to give them and miss all of the deep character work and the empathetic sensibility and sort of the stuff about Mr. Miracle being a book about an escape artist that makes that book work.
So you think people are just going to be like, oh, people want to see Mr. Miracle's ding-dang.
It's not even about the ding-dang. It's about like, oh, so Mr. Miracle tries to commit suicide at the beginning of that book. That's what people want to read now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you have nailed that one. Because that, you know, like the comics that inspired the name of that category is certainly a great comic.
Yeah.
That is getting a lot of buzz and is going to be in paperback for a while.
Oh, yes. It's going to be one of those comics with legs, right? It's going to be one of those comics that people give to other people to read and say, hey, here's a good comic. Read this.
There are going to be people in 5 years, 10 years, for whom Mr. Miracle by Tom King and Mr. Odds is their first comic because it is given to them by a well-meaning friend.
Yeah, exactly. And those are the kinds of comics where people who are looking to cash in are going to say, what's popular, what sold really well and was really well received, and how can we do that same thing? Mr. Miracle is exactly the kind of comic that people are going to do that with.
Yeah, I think you called it. I think you called it. I hope that we get more comics that are good like that. God, it would be nice if we got more comics that were good like that.
I mean, I would love it, but I don't think that's what – that's not what happens.
No, it never is. It's it never happens that we get – it takes 20 fucking years for a Steve Orlando to come along who's learned the right lessons from Grant Morrison. You know, it takes 20 years for an Al Ewing to come along who's learned all the right lessons.
Yeah, and people are still taking the wrong lessons from Watchmen, so.
Just last week, in fact.
All right, those are our categories from James Harmon. James, thanks for sending those in. Next up, we have two categories from Noah Chevalier. Starting with the My Little Punisher Frederick is Mortjic Award for the best thing with the worst fans of 2017.
I have a pick for this, but I'm curious to see if you have a pick.
I do. I'm surprised to say this, but it's Star Wars.
That is the least surprising thing to me. Because I used to work in a comic book store, and the worst fans to deal with. The top was probably Transformers guys, who were like super into the toys. At least where I was, like in the store where I was working. The second worst, consistently Star Wars fans. Like, not all Star Wars fans, but a certain type of Star Wars fan.
The thing that gets me is Star Wars is the most popular thing in the world. Claiming ownership on Star Wars blows my mind. Like, a lot of people agreed that the prequels are bad, and we just kind of said, like, okay, they're bad, and moved on from it. And some of us latched onto it and complained about it for a long time. I was guilty of that too.
Don't really appreciate that, but go on, Matt.
Hey, I'm as guilty of anybody as that, or for that. But like the stuff that was being said about Last Jedi from that certain subsection of Star Wars fans, it was so annoying. Like, it was just trying not to like a movie.
Yes.
I can't think of any better example of best thing with worst fans.
Well, my pick, as it is every year when we give out this award, is comic books.
I can't say you're wrong.
They're the best thing. Aiden once described comic books. She was like, I know they're the thing you love. I know they're the only thing you love. And she was incorrect about that, but not by a lot. There's maybe like four things. Boy, oh boy. It's pretty rough out there sometimes. Wild on these streets.
It is wild on these streets. Well, Star Wars and comic books. Those are your answers for that one. Our next category from Noah is the best show, comic, or whatever with the dumbest name of 2017.
Did you have a pick for this one? I've been trying to think.
Yeah, I have.
And okay.
And since we gave a nod to this earlier, I feel less bad about it. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the unbelievable Gwenpool.
Yeah, probably so.
Like, it's a good comic, and I like that character. It's the dumbest fucking name, and it's confusing. Like,
it's
very
confusing.
We even talked to Chris Hastings about this when we had him on the show, that everybody thinks she's just like a girl Deadpool, right? Mm-hmm. Or like Gwen Stacy is Deadpool, and she's not.
No, like, the concept is so much better than the name.
Yeah.
Like, the concept that had to be put on the name after the name already existed.
It's a bad – like, if they – and I hope they do. If they publish a Gwenpool comic again, I really hope they come up with a new title.
I hope the title is Gwenpool, comma, but it's Gwen space pool with an E. It's her name. She is a person from our world who reads comic books who came to the Marvel Universe. She's not Gwen Stacy as Deadpool. Number one.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you could just call it, she's not Gwen Stacy as Deadpool. Yeah. That's a good title.
It wasn't good, but I do have a suggestion for like the worst named thing of 2017.
I am very excited to hear it.
Do you remember there was a WWE event that was called Great Balls of Fire?
Fuck. I forgot until you just reminded me.
Nope, that happened. That was real.
You know what else has a terrible name? Doomsday Clock.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's not that bad, though, because the Doomsday Clock is a thing. That's a pre-existing thing.
But why is it the title of the comic?
I think that actually fits the comic. There's a lot of clocks in Watchmen.
Yeah.
I think you can get away with that one more than you can get away with literally anything else about Doomsday Clock.
What do you think about the title of the Batman Flash crossover, The Button?
Terrible. For a crossover that actually ended up kind of being like fun and weird and just like real damn goofy, calling it The Button. Matt, The Button only means something to people who have read that comic.
It's true.
Ugh. Boy, 2017, what a year.
But the best show or comic with the dumbest name, definitely The Unbelievable Gwenpool.
Probably so. Or Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I didn't watch for a season because of the name.
Yeah.
But is actually like super good. And actually the name fits, but it's like, it's like calling a show Cougar Town.
Yeah, it's misleading. It's misleading. Yes. All right. Thanks for those categories, Noah. Our final two listener-submitted categories come from Ryan Bielik, or Bielik. I never know how to say your last name, Ryan. I'm sorry. It starts with the best fist pump moment of 2017, and I think we agree on this one.
Yeah, it's pretty good. First of all, it's everything Scott Snyder wrote Batman doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, almost the entirety of the metal miniseries could go in here.
Yeah, and Alfred blowing the side of a pirate ship off with a shotgun and going, yo-ho, fucking ho. Like, you might have forgotten that happened this year, but it did, and it was dope.
I did not forget that happened.
But I think our number one pick was Batman pulling out Baby Darkseid from a sack.
Yeah, and being like, I'll use this.
Did you read the latest issue of Metal?
Yeah.
Where fucking Starro shows up and he's like, I'm Starro, motherfuckers. God, that comic is so good.
The thing about Batman pulling Darkseid Baby out of the sack is that Darkseid Baby's been in a backpack for however long.
Darkseid Baby was wearing little goggles to keep him from using the Omega effect, which means there's baby-sized goggles that can block the Omega effect, and somebody needs to pick that up like 30 years from now.
Okay, number one, that is that he was in that sack for that long. Number two is that this made Baby Darkseid, which was dumb as hell, like matter and important and something good.
Yeah. Because that's the thing about Metal. We talked about how Metal is the perfect comic specifically for people like you and me. And part of that is like how much stuff it picks up on. Like, oh, you know, it's got the Batmanium from Super Heavy. It's got the Prometheum, the Dionysium. It's got fucking Barbatos in it. It's got the Dark Multiverse. But it's not just like stuff from good comics. It's like Baby Darkseid showing up.
It's everything.
And being great.
It's everything.
Yeah.
Coming brilliant. Together. And I gotta say, the runner-up in this category is another thing from Metal, which is the reveal that there were only four letters in the system. So they had to leave the L off the end of Metal.
Matt. Are you talking about how metahumans...
Are metal humans? Oh my god.
Oh, it's so good. I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. Metal's the best DC crossover of all time.
It's hard to beat.
I literally have no idea how many issues it's going to be, but it could like tank everything. And what we have right now is still better than Invasion.
It's given us so much. The mantling happened.
Oh, the mantling. Did you talk about when the Judas tribe did the mantling?
I am talking about that. They infused Batman with Batmanium.
Yeah, well, they used the Prometheum and the Batmanium and the Elysium and the Electrum and the Dionysium.
That's right.
Matt, the nth metal is the ninth metal. It fills me with... Okay, remember when we reviewed Doomsday Clock number one?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, it's bad, but more than being bad, it just bums me out. It just makes me sad. Metal is the opposite of that. Yeah. I cannot talk about it without a smile on my face and a song in my heart.
It fills me with joy. Like, just pure joy. All right, finally, here's the final category from Ryan. This is the best single line in comics of 2017. I believe we have choices from the same comic series, but different quotes.
Okay, I'll go first on this one. Okay. Mine is when we are introduced to the character Hundred Cat,
mm-hmm.
Who is so-called because he fights like 100 cats. And Pomona Slim asks him if that's a good thing, and his response is, man, that's like 2,000 pounds worth of cat. That's a ton of cats, my fellow. That's like 800 claws.
And we should say that that is from Rock Candy Mountain by Kyle
that
Starks.
Is from Rock Candy Mountain by Kyle Starks, yes.
And Chris Schweitzer. So my quote is also from Rock Candy Mountain, but it is a different quote. It is, he's got punch diarrhea, and their faces are the toilet bowl.
That's a pretty good one. I also like when 100 Cat fights the Clanimal.
Uh-huh.
And the Clanimal's last words are, oh, I have some regrets.
As he should. As well he should.
Oh, what a great, what a very good comic.
Now, Chris, it's my understanding that you have a few additional categories before we get to the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, but because these are all listener submitted, I never know if we've got enough. So I've got a couple. I just want to, like, we can lightning round these, Matt, you and me, real quick.
Okay, because we did have enough.
We did actually, yes, have enough. Number one on my category, best dog.
Oh, G-Dog. G-Dog.
Well, here's the thing. G-Dog is like a dog-human hybrid.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
That's fair. I would say Sparky from Dead of Winter, the Kyle Starks comic based on a board game that everybody should read. Very, very good.
Okay.
Also, all dogs. Very good dogs. Here I have my second one, Best Matt.
Best Matt in comics?
Best Matt in general.
I mean, colorist Matt Wilson is pretty good.
Oh, well, I think it's writer and podcaster Matt Wilson.
I think I'm going to go with colorist, but thank you.
Next category, baddest man of the year. Again, for the 79th year in a row, I'm going to give that one to Batman.
Sure, sure.
Next category, number one jam.
What's your number one jam?
Well, according to Spotify, it was Cut to the Feeling by Carly Rae Jepsen.
That's a good one. That's a good song.
I didn't do this, but I was thinking of doing a joke where since we're at an award show here in the Flash Gordon Memorial Coliseum in North Carolina, that I would do a bit where I would play you off. Like, I would just interrupt you, but the song was always going to be Mr. Brightside. I thought would be very funny.
Well, can I give my number one jam?
Yeah, please, please, please.
It's probably Bodak Yellow by Cardi B.
Okay, okay.
It's good. It's good. This is Red Bottoms. These is Bloody Shoes, Chris.
Also, again, I believe it's a 2016 album, but anything off 24 Karat Magic. is Perm. Perm was probably the song I liked the most this year.
Sure. Also, gotta say 911 by Tyler, the Creator.
Next category I've got for us, Matt. Second best game of the year.
Second best game of the year.
Because game of the year is Breath of the Wild. Game of the year is Zelda. Like,
yeah.
Pretty much hands down.
I mean, Mario Odyssey is probably number two. Although I have been playing Wolfenstein 2, and it's good also.
The New Colossus?
The New Colossus, indeed.
I'm going to go with Stardew Valley for the Switch. I find it very soothing.
I'm so glad you get some soothing relief from that.
It's so soothing. The Al Ewingest moment of 2017 is my next category.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, my pick is going to be in US Avengers in the first issue when the bad guys roll up in a helicarrier that has a volcano on top.
Very, very good.
It's pretty good. Those are my categories.
Well, those were good. Thanks for adding those. Now, Chris, it's time for us to name the most prestigious of title holders. The War Rocket Ajax Intercontinental Champion.
A title that can trace its lineage all the way back to, I want to say, 2012.
That seems right. That seems right.
And we, this is one that we talk about beforehand, and it's a tough choice this year. There were a lot of good candidates thrown around, I think.
Yeah, we've tossed around a lot of different names in our discussions. Some people who have just been doing great work and like nothing but great work, like Becky Cloonan's name came up. I really loved Southern Cross this year. Her work on Punisher was quite good. I've enjoyed what Becky's been doing for the last few years. She just puts out good stuff.
We talked about maybe giving it to Kyle, making him a two-time Intercontinental Champion, because Rock Candy Mountain, I think for both of us, was probably the favorite comic of the year. And Dead of Winter, if you did not read Dead of Winter, the paperback of that is coming out pretty soon, and it's just so much better than a zombie comic based on a board game. An admittedly very good board game, like should be. Just very, very good stuff.
Yeah. Just on the basis of G-Dog, Kurt Busiek and Mike Norton could be candidates for this. Kurt Busiek also put out the first issue, or I guess the first issue came out in 2017, of Batman Creature of the Night was a really good alternate take on Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. T.D. Howard has been doing some stellar work this year, like the Assassinistas is coming up, but Magdalena was a really surprising, really fun book. Also, she's just generally a delight to talk to.
She did some great stories in the WWE comics.
Yes. That really good Finn Balor origin.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many, like legitimately, Tom King was another one we thought about. Like, is it going to be Tom King or Kyle Starks being the first two-time Intercontinental Champion? Just a lot of Snyder, obviously, was one that sure. We threw out.
James Tynion's been doing good Batman stuff also.
Yeah,
Chip could be another two-time Intercontinental Champion winner. Because Spectacular Spider-Man has been so good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Legitimately, so much good stuff. Like, you forget about it looking back at this past year, this close to it. So much good stuff in comics. So many people doing, like, really, really great work. But in the end, I think we came down to a really strong choice. I will say, I did think about taking it in a completely different direction. I did tell you I wanted to give it to the concept of dogs.
Yes. Prefaced by your dogs category.
Yeah. Because I did feel like humans not doing so good in 2017. Maybe we can take it back this year. Humans had a rough 2017. And a rough 2016. But in the end, we decided it should go to probably a human rather than a concept. This year.
This year, yeah. So I think we finally settled on giving it to someone who has done some amazing work all year long. Everything she has done has been great. And she has just had an incredible year getting to do lots of different stuff. Kelly Thompson. She's been working on Jim and the Holograms. I think she finished up her run on Jim and the Holograms this year. She has been writing Hawkeye at Marvel. She did the Leia annual issue, Star Wars Annual Volume 2, Number 2, which was all focused on Leia. I think that actually maybe came out in 2016, but we're counting it.
Co-created Pash Devane, who everybody immediately loved.
She wrote two issues of the America comic. She did another Star Wars miniseries this year about Captain Phasma. She's just doing like tons of cool stuff. She just started the Rogue and Gambit series, which technically started in 2018. But like so much cool stuff coming out from Kelly lately.
Yeah, really, I don't know. When we gave this award to Chip, it was because Chip had like the breakout year. Like after being in and around comics for so long, like from like Monster Cops and Prison Funnies to doing like stuff for the Post in Canada, like the Sex Criminals year was like the breakout year for Chip. I don't know if we can say that Kelly had that kind of year, because I feel like that would have been the gem year, but this was certainly like a taking it to the next level year for Kelly Thompson. In terms of projects and in terms of exposure, but like consistency and quality has been there all along.
Yeah.
Just legitimately a writer who you can guarantee that you're going to get a good one, over the past year. Like everything has been a consistent S rank, 100% all killer, no filler roster of comics from Kelly Thompson.
All HQC from Kelly.
All HQC.
And Chris, now that we've given out the biggest award of the night, we can bring Play Button annual Gordy Awards to a close.
I gotta say, I want to say congratulations to everybody. Obviously, congratulations to Kelly. Congratulations to the concept of dogs for being a good sport and a good boy. Congratulations to DC Metal for being a comic we can't talk about without smiling. Congratulations to you, Matt, for getting half of the award for Best Matt.
I do my best, yes.
So congratulations to all of our winners. Congratulations to all of our runners-up, everybody that we discussed. Lots of good stuff out there in this world still. Congratulations to you, and congratulations to me. Congratulations to you, the listener. Thank you for joining us for the Gordies.
That's right. And if you want to get in touch with us, the Gordies are over, so there are no more Gordy categories to be sent in. But there's always Every Story Ever lists, panel president lists, and more. You can send that to our email address at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to check out our website also, which is warrocketajax.com. That's where our lists live and where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. I am hoping dearly to get our lists updated very soon on the website. So thank you for being patient with me there. Sorry that I haven't gotten things up to date a little faster. Also go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you like the show. That helps us out. Or wherever you get your podcasts, leave us a review. I just got the show up, actually, where you can ask your Alexa to play the show. You can just say, Alexa, play War Rocket Ajax, and it'll do it. If you're listening to this on an Alexa now, it might have started a new episode. But leave us a review if you can. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you where you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net, and you'll find links to all my stuff, including Copernicus Jones Robot Detective, which is now back on Comixology after taking a little break from being on Comixology. The first three issues are up now. The next three issues go up this week. And then hopefully issues 7 and 8 will be up really soon. So thanks for your patience on that. Chris, where can people find you?
People can hit up the-isb.com. There are links to all kinds of things. I haven't mentioned in a while, I do a column every week at looper.com where I answer listener questions or reader questions, I suppose they are, in the style of like if someone were to ask Chris a question, but it's called That's What's Up with Chris Sims. And you can always ask me questions for that and give me some stuff to write about. Those have been really fun. I just wrote a nice little piece about why we don't have kid sidekicks anymore. So go check those out, please. And also check out the comics that I write. There's some I'm having a busy January, so there should be a lot of stuff coming down the line pretty soon here in 2018. But yeah, the-isb.com, the best place to find all the links. That's going to do it for the Play Buttons Annual Gordy Awards. Matt Wilson, did we get an award?
Yeah, there's one more award statuette left here on the stage. It is the HQC S-Rank Award of 2017 for doing podcasts that are only HQC and S-Rank.
That's what we do and how we do it. Folks, have a great 2018. Let's be good to each other. Let's get through this together. My hand is touching your hand. Have a great week.
We love you.